The House will come to order. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Barbudo. Berger. Blake.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird. Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Eklund.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Freeman.
Here.
Gay.
Here.
Gingery. Goggles excused. Greer.
Here.
Green.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Hunt. Illaway. Illaway. Yagi. Kasparic. Croker.
Here.
Crone. Crone.
Here.
Lockhart. Lockhart.
Here.
Laux.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Miller. Moniz.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Pedersen.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Petroff.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Semlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Steward.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Vronish.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Barbudo.
Here.
59 present, 1 excused.
Please stand as Pastor Bob Schmidt from St. Paul's Lutheran Church offers our prayer this morning.
Let us pray. Lord Heavenly Father, we thank you for the many gifts that you have given us to serve this state. We pray that you send us your Holy Spirit, that the decisions that need to be made will be made according to your will. We ask that as these sessions continue to flourish, to serve this great state, that your will not only be done, but that our hearts are open to the needs of the people of this great state. Lord God, we ask that you bless all in attendance and all that are not here, that they may do your work for this state. In your name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. David.
You're looking good. What are you doing?
What?
You've been exercising or something?
No, I don't think so.
Huh? Okay.
No more than ever.
You're living the clean life, man.
Thank you.
We are at that order of business, Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 14, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Today we have as the doctor of the day, Dr. Dean Bartholomew. If you want to welcome him, I don't know if he's back there, but... And just by way of announcement, there are a lot of questions regarding the election contest. The House will take that matter up at 2 p.m. today. We have a special event today, but we're just going to hold on for just a moment, and I will call on Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry that I interrupted the special event, but I just want to take a moment to recognize one of my young constituents in Cheyenne. Mr. Bison Taylor, would you stand up, please, for us? Greetings. Mr. Speaker, I just want to say, talk about dedication. It's his day off from school, and he's here with the Wyoming legislature.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
On my right, your left, in the balcony, we have Gary and Penny Asplin from Laramie, Wyoming. They run the best bed and board in the world, hands down. Please give them a welcome.
Representative Yagi.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Thank you. To my right up in the gallery, we have the replacement for one of our great legislators, Senator Tex Boggs, who was president of Western Wyoming Community College. We have Dr. Carla Leach. Trying to keep us in mind and just welcome her. She's just a tremendous addition to us. Welcome, Dr. Lee.
Representative Barbuto.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, although I'm not always convinced that I'm her favorite representative based on some discussions we have at home, I am sure that she's my favorite constituent and the person I love more than anything else in this world and who makes it partly possible for me to be here, my wife, Erin, up to your right.
And now would be a good time for anyone else that has privilege of the floor, because we are awaiting the participants of our special event, so... Are there any others at this time? All right. The House is going to stand at ease till the sound of the gavel. All right, we're going to adjust our schedule a little bit to make the most use of our time. First, Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege the floor.
Please proceed.
I don't know how often we want to do this, but I'm very honored to be able to introduce, and I guess everybody knows her. Our new superintendent, Cindy Hill, is up here right behind me, and she has some of her staff with her. I know Cheryl Lane is here and some others, but just really looking forward to working with her in education and just like to welcome her to the House.
Okay, we're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
House Bill number 23, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to a sex offender. This bill was referred to the Judiciary Committee, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne. No, Brechtel, Nicholas, Peasley, sign representing Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 44, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Childers, Miller, Peterson, Semlek. No, Camel, Madden, Vronish, excused, Goggles, sign representing Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 27, respectfully report same back to the House that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Crone, Laux, Teeters. No, Freeman, Croker, Madden, signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 72, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, which was referred House Bill 86, recommends that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 109, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparik, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 113, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparik, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 20, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller. No, Peasley, signed Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 49, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Kraft, Gay, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller. No, Gingrey, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom is referred House Bill 87, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Buchanan, Connolly, Kraft, Gingrey, Illaway, Lubno, Patton, Quarberg, Shepperson, Stubson, Throne, excused, Goggles, signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we will proceed to the special event for the day, which is the recognition of Equality Day in Wyoming. And Today we celebrate that holiday to commemorate the life and legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is a day for celebration, and joining us today to pay tribute to Dr. King is Gertrude McLaughlin and members of Cheyenne's Love and Charity Club who are in the balcony. And if you'd please help me in welcoming these special guests to the chamber at this time. Ms. McLaughlin is going to say a few words about Martin Luther King Jr.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Members of the representatives of Wyoming citizens, former state representative and former state senator Harriet Elizabeth Byrd, honored guests, and members of the Love and Charity Club. I am Gertrude McLaughlin, a resident of Wyoming for the past 30 years. I am a retired teacher of Laramie County School District Number 1. I was privileged to work for 21 years as an elementary teacher at Corlette School. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to you concerning Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whom we honor on this special day set aside to commemorate his leadership during the height of the Civil Rights era. Martin was sent for such a time. He was able to articulate the concerns of the members of the black communities and other minorities. He believed the Constitution that was drafted by our forefathers. It was the blueprint for our nation. It is the blueprint for our nation, stating we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Dr. King encouraged the honoring of the rights of the Negro. He warned each of us to be responsible for respecting and protecting the freedoms of all men. We have been inspired to live better. The world and our country are better because of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. A little history about the Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday. It took 15 years to create the federal holiday. Congressman John Conyers, Democrat from Michigan, first introduced legislation for the holiday in 1968, a few weeks or months after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. Congress passed the holiday legislation in 1983, which was then signed into law by President Ronald Reagan. The first official federal Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was observed on the third Monday in 1986. Wyoming observed the holiday by executive order for Governor Sullivan in 1989. Legislation was passed for a state holiday in Wyoming in 1990. The holiday is observed as Martin Luther King Jr. / Equality Day. Wyoming being known as the Equality State, Wyoming was the first to give women the right to vote. For the first time, the holiday was observed in some form in 1993 in all 50 states. Today, former state representative and former state senator Harriet Elizabeth Byrd, who worked tirelessly to draft legislation for a state holiday, who without the help of fellow legislators, this would not have been possible. I believe she said it took about 9 years. Let us recognize her. She is in attendance. Thank you, Senator Harriet Elizabeth Byrd. We appreciate you and your tenacity. On behalf of the Love and Charity Club, the sponsors of the march to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., our great civil rights leader, we thank the legislature for the opportunity to speak before you and for your continued work in this legislative body for the citizens of the great state of Wyoming. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Equality Day. May equality forever reign in Wyoming.
Ms. McLaughlin, I'd like to thank you today for coming over and sharing your insights regarding the legacy of Dr. King. It's much appreciated. And ladies and gentlemen, the Cheyenne Love and Charity Club invites all legislators to their annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day March this afternoon, and that's going to begin at noon at the Depot Plaza, which is located at the corner of Lincoln Way and Capitol Avenue, and there will be a celebration at the conclusion of that march on the steps of the Capitol at approximately 12:30 p.m. So if your schedules permit, please plan to join in those festivities. Thank you again. We are at that order of business of introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration will be House Bill 55.
House Bill 55, introduced by Representative Wallace.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to administration of government executive orders.
House Bill 55 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 71.
House Bill 71, introduced by Representative Stubson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the regulation of traffic on highways regarding seat belts.
House Bill 71 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 82.
House Bill 82, introduced by Representative Byrd.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to fair employment practices.
House Bill 82 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 119.
House Bill 119, introduced by Representative Edmonds.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public records and public meetings.
House Bill 119 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 120.
House Bill 120, introduced by Representative Edmonds.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public meetings.
House Bill 120 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 121.
House Bill 121, introduced by Representative Edmonds.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public records.
House Bill 121 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 140.
House Bill 140, introduced by Representative Roscoe.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to governmental claims.
House Bill 140 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Connolly.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to governmental immunity.
House Bill 141 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 142.
House Bill 142, introduced by Representative Connolly.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to discrimination.
House Bill 142 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 138.
House Bill 138, introduced by Representative Madden.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to public funds.
House Bill 138 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 145.
House Bill 145, introduced by Representative Escobel.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to motor vehicle registration.
House Bill 145 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 146.
House Bill 146, introduced by Representative Escobel.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to vehicle sales and use tax.
House Bill 146 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147.
House Bill 147, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to taxation and revenue.
House Bill 147 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 85.
House Bill 85, introduced by Representative McKim.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to teacher contracts.
And House Bill 85 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 46.
House Bill 46, introduced by Representative Stubson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to campaign funds.
House Bill 46 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 136.
House Bill 136, introduced by Representative Barbuto.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to vacancies in office.
House Bill 136 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 139.
House Bill 139, introduced by Representative Bonner.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to highways.
And House Bill 139 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 129.
House Bill 129, introduced by Representative Harshman.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to nuclear energy.
And House Bill 129 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 36.
House Bill 36, introduced by Representative Escobel.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming Cancer Control Act.
House Bill 36 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 99.
House Bill 99, introduced by Representative Gingrey.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the treatment of substance abuse.
And House Bill 99 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. We are at that order of business, bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 13.
House Bill 13, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to education.
House Bill 13 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a second time? Oh, excuse me, didn't see you up there. Do we have an amendment? We do. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would move second reading amendment number one to House Bill 13, and we'll explain it.
Please proceed.
Thank you. What this is, ladies and gentlemen, is kind of a preemptive move on behalf of the Education Committee. And what it does is it recognizes the real underlying reasons that House Bill 13 was introduced in its original form in the first place. It has been articulated in committees time and time again to various degrees that the real reason for this is to restore some of the enrollment that has been lost in fine arts and performing arts and vocational education by what we had originally having foreign languages as the sole outside the core or outside the science and math core of the Hathaway program. And what I'm simply doing here is adding or recognizing that there's valuable courses not just in performing arts and fine arts and vocational education, but there's valuable courses for students in all of the core areas we have in our school systems, and they're cited here in this amendment. they're worthy of being considered to help with a well-rounded education. It puts all of these core areas on an equal footing, and what it really does to make maybe stall some of the problems we're going to have is that if we let House Bill 13 go through just like it is now, we're going to have people from the humanities teachers are going to come in and probably make quite logical arguments why they've got some worthy courses that are good for intellectual development, cognitive thinking, and so on. There's also been proof of physical education having a positive impact on cognitive thinking. And you go right down the line. You got health and safety, applied technology. All of these core areas are contain valuable courses, and it's what it does is it puts all these core areas, regardless whether they're part of the math and science core, It puts them all on this equal footing, and it doesn't cause, by our selecting a subset of a chosen few within the Hathaway, it doesn't cause the enrollments to necessarily go down. This way they're all on the same footing, and I would urge your enthusiastic support, and I'll be glad to answer questions if anyone has any.
Further discussion on the amendment, Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, I appreciate the bringer's creative way to kind of look at this, and that's the beauty of having 60 of us in one room. We all have a different lens, and I think he's taking the right tack here, and that's really how this bill was sold and brought to us, was about student choice and about parent choice, and really, why wouldn't third year Western civilization, Western cultures class be honored the same that a cooking one class would be? And so I think, again, if we're going to look at this as a choice issue, and really concede that the rigor is going to be in that fourth year of math and science, I mean, let's face it, it's going to be that pre-calc type class and the ACT. And, if we can get rid of this special interest business that the bringer of this amendment spoke to. And I think that's the key. And we'll be done with that. And then our focus can rightfully be on, where do we draw the line? Do we raise the ACT a little more? Do we require a little more of this or that? Those are the things we should really focus on instead of just, being pressured by one group one year and another group the next year. We can just put an end to this deal and really honor the choice. So it's a really creative idea, and I'm glad to see that. I appreciate it on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Didn't push hard enough.
Thanks so much, Mr. Speaker. I'm in favor of this amendment also, for the reasons that were stated. It's not so much about the dropping enrollments in some of the other classes that we offer in our schools. It's about choices, as that good speaker just before me said. It's about choices for our kids. It's about allowing them to not have to take just 1 or 2 years of something, but 4 years of a foreign language, 4 years of a fine art, whatever it is they choose. It's also about choices for our small schools and giving them equal opportunity to provide Hathaway scholarship opportunities for their students. The rigor, the excellence of the students is measured by ACT scores, measured by GPA scores. So I don't want to go on with arguments that have already been made, but I would encourage your support of this amendment. Thanks.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Representative Madden.
Thank you for the comments. I don't have anything more to add, and I would call for the question on this.
Question having been called on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 13. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has passed. The question is House Bill 13 having been read two separate times, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19.
House Bill 19, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to circuit court judges, assignment of retired circuit court judges.
House Bill 19 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 28.
House Bill 28, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to child protection, shelter care, and initial hearings.
House Bill 28 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 40.
House Bill 40, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure.
House Bill 40, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 57.
House Bill 57, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to feral livestock.
House Bill 57, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 58.
House Bill 60, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue of oil and gas field services.
House Bill 60, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution Number 1.
House Joint Resolution Number 1, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to eliminate restrictions on the authority of district court commissioners.
House Joint Resolution Number 1, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not exactly sure how to do this, but I need to, House Bill 49 needs to be re-referred to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
The motion is for House Bill 49?
House Bill 49.
49 to be re-referred to committee number 2,
Appropriations.
Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. We are at that order of business, adoption of rules. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House rules and the joint rules previously adopted as the temporary rules of the House of Representatives 61st Legislature be adopted, together with any amendments approved by the House, as the permanent rules of the House of Representatives of the 61st Legislature.
You have heard the motion. And before voting on the motion to adopt the temporary rules as the permanent rules, the House will first consider any proposed amendments to the temporary rules. Amendments to the temporary rules require a majority vote for adoption. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move adoption of Joint Rule Amendment 1 to create Joint Rule 22. And I will proceed with explaining the amendment with your permission, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
I bring you Joint Rule 22. The unfortunate reality of being involved in today's political system is there are those who would use ethics challenges as a tool to advance their political interests. On the other hand, this body should take true ethics violations very seriously. Currently, we have no rules to address ethical violations. Joint Rule 22 attempts to strike a balance between quickly addressing spurious claims while at the same time addressing serious claims. Allow me to walk you through the rule. A signed written complaint must be delivered to the presiding officer. Misconduct is defined, and that's a term that hasn't been defined in the past, as those things that are a violation of our Ethics and Disclosure Act, the conflict of interest statutes, and those things contained in the Constitution for discipline of a member of the legislature. If the complaint is frivolous, the presiding officer, after consultation with the majority and minority floor leader, may dismiss the complaint outright. If that committee decides that the complaint is not frivolous, then it goes to the management council members from that house for a determination of probable cause. For purposes of this rule, probable cause is defined as a factual situation sufficient to warrant a reasonably prudent person informed of the legislative procedures and duties to believe that a violation or other misconduct has occurred. After a finding of probable cause by the members of Management Council of the House, if there is one, then it goes to a special committee of 9 members to hear the facts. That committee is comprised to reflect as closely as possible the majority and minority members of the House. The meeting's open to the public. Then the committee has a hearing, it takes testimony, and it makes a determination. It can dismiss the complaint outright, or it can send it to the floor for further action. If the complaint's substantiated, then the body as a whole may expel, censure, reprimand, or otherwise discipline a member. The expulsion proceedings are contained in the Constitution. It's a two-thirds vote of the majority. Expulsion is, of course, the most serious. Censure is a little less serious, and reprimand is even less serious. There's no real definition of censure and reprimand. Censure is a more public reading of the charges and an order of censure in the open house. Reprimand is sort of a letter in your personnel file. The otherwise discipline can include things like removal from committee memberships and reassignment, those types of things. Since this is a joint rule, it's an up or down vote, but and since debate is limited to those like second or third reading, I would stand for any questions and come back to answer them on my second time.
Representative Childers, for your first time.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. I guess I do have a question. A situation that was handled in a committee. It was referred to the Speaker, as it should be, and it was also handled by a management council. But my question is, as the chairman of that committee, is the request that correspondence be forwarded to the chair or co-chairs in that case, because it was an interim topic or interim committee meetings, be notified, because sometimes they can provide more information on situations that came up. Now, if it's an individual complaint, I understand that. But if it's a complaint because of committee action, I believe that the co-chairs, or if it's an individual committee, the chair should be notified and provided any correspondence, and that be discussed with leadership before any action proceeds. Sometimes there's a better enlightenment of all the situation that possibly it wouldn't even be brought forward. That's a question.
Any other questions before we call on the majority floor leader to address that question? Representative Stewart, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question, if the bringer of this could explain the discussion in committee, the justification, if you will, that the finding regarding probable cause, why this would be held in executive session.
Anyone else for their first time? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the question of the good representative from Park County, that's probably a good suggestion. I think as a matter of process, the chair would be notified. That's how these things work themselves through. I didn't have enough forethought to include it in my draft of the rule, and I apologize for that. I think also it depends a lot on the situation and the questions and how they're asked and how they'll come forward in a written complaint. With respect to the question from the good representative from the Mother County, the reason for the executive session for the probable cause determination is if there are salacious and baseless allegations that don't have probable cause, it just didn't seem like it made sense to create additional press and fanfare on the probable cause determination. These things can be handled sometimes publicly, sometimes discreetly. If they're baseless, discreetly seems to be the best. Because those things that are baseless
are being used as a political tool, and the more positive reinforcement we give to baseless political tools, the more that they're going to occur. And so the executive session, the thought was that we need to protect our process, and we need to protect our members, and we need to protect our citizen legislature. And we can't do that if we're always going to expensive attorney-laden proceedings that bring themselves out in the forefront of the press instead of dealing with our day-to-day business. And so that's why this rule tries to strike a balance between dealing publicly and openly with legitimate ethical complaints in a way that's absolutely open and getting rid of the spurious ones early on.
Representative Childers, for your second time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I do appreciate the notification, in other words, the verbal communication, but I guess what I'm saying is, in this particular situation, seeing the correspondence in itself and then discussing it with leadership, in other words, the paperwork that came on it, basically, I would thoroughly agree with the majority floor leader that it would have been baseless to even consider it in forwarding it to management council, in my learned opinion. But what's done is what's done. But that's what I'm saying, is if have all the information so the committee chairs can basically understand what the complaint is in the first place, because we do make rulings, and quite frankly, I think I made the proper ruling in the first place.
Representative Stewart, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just becoming aware of the process for the adoption of these rules, not allowing any amendments. And I guess I do have some distaste, if you will, for doing the business of the people behind closed doors, even to the extent that it may be embarrassing. So that said, I struggle that with my vote on this, but perhaps I'm maybe inclined to just vote this down and maybe come back with something more acceptable to myself, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the point's quite valid, that the difficulty in not able to provide any amendments, and especially the amendments I'm proposing, simply for notification of those committee chairs where the situation comes up. I'm have mixed emotions myself about the whole situation, but the point being able to provide amendments is not there. So In a way, I'd propose laying it back to allow us to provide some amendments.
Thank you, Representative Childers. You're somewhat of a clairvoyant, as I call on the good majority floor leader.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Pursuant to Rule 9-3, I move that this rule, the adoption of the rules, be laid back for one day so that we can provide any amendments and conform them to the amendments that we've just received have been made by the Senate.
You've heard the motion pursuant to 9-3 to lay the amendment back. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion carries. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've laid back the amendment, but we still have before us the motion to adopt the temporary rules as the permanent rules. Would the good majority floor leader consider withdrawing his motion to adopt those temporary rules, and then we could take the matter back up by the end of the day, I think, once we hear from the Senate on their amendments to our joint rule.
Mr. Chairman, I would respectfully withdraw my motion on the joint rule.
Your motion is granted. Thank you. We are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved in committee of the whole. Representative Pedersen.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration will be House Bill 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 18, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the quarantine of animals. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlich, Zwanitzer, Dan. Excused, Davison. Signed, Representative Semlick, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 18 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I will move and explain after the good representative, House District 46, explains the bill.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular bill refers to the quarantine of livestock. There's two major issues here, the first one being the elimination of the dipping and spraying of sheep. That no longer is a practice in the state of Wyoming, and so the committee is recommending that we eliminate that section of the law. The second portion or the issue deals with Wyoming has seen an increasing number of imported livestock into our state without any health inspections. When these people are discovered, usually due to livestock board receiving notice from their neighbors, the livestock board placed them under quarantine until a proper health requirements or imports are met. As long as the owner was going to market with the livestock, the quarantine has worked well. However, when the livestock owner does not want to go to market with the livestock or refuses to follow import requirements, the state veterinarians has few or no options to protect the livestock industry. And bottom line here is the goal is to protect the industry and the existing livestock in the state of Wyoming. An example of this would be just recently we've had 87 horses come into the Star Valley area without health or brand inspections. The livestock owner was given a citation, which he paid, but refused to have his horses Coggins tested, as he did not feel it was necessary. His neighbors were concerned that these new horses may be carrying some disease and wanted them tested. The state veterinarian did everything possible to force the testing of his horses without success. The new language at the bottom of page 2, lines 19 through 22, allows a state veterinarian to inspect, treat, vaccinate, quarantine, or sell animals imported to the Wyoming in violation of the Wyoming Statute 1119-111 or any rules promulgated thereunder. We feel it is imperative that state veterinarian have the flexibility and authority to protect the livestock industry. The most controversy of this legislation is the authority to sell livestock. We understand the livestock are private property and animals will only be sold at the resort of the amendment to the legislation as indicated. Please note that we're only amending the portion of the current statutes. There will continue to be existing statutes that if an animal is seized or sold, state veterinary expenses will be deducted with any overage of the owner of livestock done with the strays. At this time, Mr. Chairman, we could walk through the bill if you, with your permission.
Chairman Semlick, would you like to move the standing committee amendment now, or would you like the explanation of the bill first?
I will move standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 18 and ask for your favorable consideration. As the good representative who is managing this bill had said, the changes that we have proposed here with respect to the state veterinarian's ability to sell the livestock might create some concern. So the first part of the amendment on page 4, line 18, sets a pretty high bar. It just says the state vets will only sell the livestock after all other remedies have been exhausted. We think that that is self-understood, but we wanted to make sure that for those people out there that this is going to be the bar that we're going to use. The other change has to do with deleting the word animal and inserting livestock on page 5, line 4. This really deals with the importation of livestock and not all other animals, so that was just a clarifying. The amendment with respect to the governor is kind of interesting. it really comes from some other companion language in the statutes in 1119.111, where it talks about the regulation of importation of livestock. It says the governor, upon recommendation of the Wyoming Livestock Board, may regulate. So this was just kind of a conforming amendment to say that if the governor has that authority, and if we want to continue to give the governor that authority along with the livestock board, well, then we would add it in this portion of the change of the statute. So that's the amendment. I would ask for your favor. If there's no questions, I'd call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 18.
Question hasn't been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 18, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 18 has passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referring to page 2, line 9, it's just the addition of the 1119-103 statute. Page 2, line 19, a new section there. It says the state veterinarian may inspect, treat, test, vaccinate, quarantine, or sell any animal imported into the Wyoming in violation of Wyoming Statute 1119-111. Or any rules promulgated under that. On page 3, just section C, it was B, now is C. And then on line 13, just added the word the state veterinarian. Line 14, if you notice, we've also eliminated on line 14, dipping, spraying, or other. Also inserted again on line 14, testing, vaccination, or quarantine. Line 23, page 3, have inserted the word tested, vaccinated, or quarantined. Again, on page 4, line 1, added the words test, vaccinate, or quarantine. Line 3, we have again eliminated the dip, sprayed, or otherwise. Line 4, again, added the word tested, vaccinated, or on line 5, quarantined. Again, on 7, eliminating the dipping, spraying, or other treatments. Line 18, adding the word testing, treating, vaccinating, or quarantine. Then on line 20, we've added a new section, section J. Any person failing to comply with this section shall be punished as provided in Wyoming Statutes 11-1-103. Then going to line 5, we've added again the wording starting on line 2, section D. The state veterinarian may himself or order another to inspect, treat, test, vaccinate, quarantine, or sell an animal imported into Wyoming in violation of Wyoming Statute 1119-111 or any rules promulgated thereunder. Any order or regulation made by the state veterinarian is subject to review, modification, or annulment by the board of any subsequent meeting. Another section starting on line 10, section E. Failure to obey an order of the state veterinarian under subsection D of this section shall be subject to appeal to the due process provided by Wyoming Statute 1119-103. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Chairwoman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question. On page 5, lines 2 and 3, and I guess I'm just not really clear. I mean, I guess it bothers me that the state veterinarian can just order another person. I don't exactly know what that means. So can he order your neighbor to inspect, treat, test, vaccinate? Can he order the guy that owns the general store? I mean, I'm just not really sure what that means, or order another to inspect. And then if that person says, no, I don't want to do that, then he's guilty of a crime. He's guilty of a misdemeanor if he refuses to follow the order of the state vet. So I guess that language to me seems very broad, very open-ended. And I would just like a discussion as to what was talked about in committee about giving the state vet that authority to order, quote, another. I don't even think it says it's person. It just says order another to inspect or treat. And then the last part of it, I guess if he says no, he's not going to, then he's guilty of a crime, yet then you can go back to the next meeting and annul the order. I'm just not sure how that whole process is going to work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The discussion, I think, was to order probably another veterinarian, but I would admit that the language is vague and would stand for any modification that we might see to that. In response to the second question, I have no response there and might yield to the good chair of our committee to see if he has any additional remarks.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to add some additional thoughts with respect to this last inquiry. Just point out that Section D is in 1119.101, which is under the regulations of the importation of livestock. So it's tightly targeted to those people. So you were talking about ordering another. It'd be someone who is in that arena who's importing livestock, not your neighbor or not the person in the general store or whatever. The purpose of this language and then some additional language that we find later on in that subparagraph D is that when we have these situations arise, there could be in cases where a legally importation of livestock, that's something that could really affect our industry if they haven't been tested. Perhaps they're carrying a disease. We feel some urge of haste to deal with this problem. So we give the state veterinarian that authority and the discretion to do that. Then we say any order beginning on line 5, end of line 5 on page 5, any order or regulation made by the state veterinarian is subject to the review, modification, annulment of the board, referring here to the livestock board, or with the adoption of the amendment to the governor. So I think we need this kind of authority for our state veterinarian in some cases to respond quickly, perhaps before the livestock board can meet. But if there's some question about whether the state veterinarian might have made some error with respect to his judgment on the importation of livestock, the livestock board would consider that at their next meeting.
Chairwoman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess that I'm understanding that section that means that if you're not in the business of importing livestock, then the state vet would not be ordering you to inspect, test, or vaccinate someone else's livestock. You have to be in the business of importing livestock, if I understood the good chairman's response to that question.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer that last question, the Livestock Board does do rules and regs on all of these issues, and so they're going to promulgate rules in this section, and I would expect under the rules and regs they will, as they have now under this section in existing law, have a list of people who, the state veterinarian, but it's mostly other veterinarians, livestock barns, but it's under the rules and regs, so you can't find it in statute, but they do make rules and regs that regard who can be compelled currently.
Any other questions? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received a letter from a veterinarian in our area that was very concerned, particularly about the section that is under immediate discussion, Section D, that the veterinarian may himself or order another without any qualifications to who the another may be. And his suggestion is that this is an invasion into his private practice where he is qualified on close to the border, and that this would be damaging his practice in the area. But further than that, what he was really suggesting is that to suggest that without qualification, but even though the person is an importing entity, that they may not have any kind of a qualification relative to quarantining or identifying a disease. So maybe a friendly amendment would be something to the effect of some qualification of who you're going to allow to do this, particularly for some of these scientific things that need more than just some persons involved in importing. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question has to do with, and I sat on this committee during the interim, and that's why I'm trying to rack my brain when we took testimony on this piece of legislation, but I can't remember what was the genesis for the bill. Somebody had to have come to us with a problem, and I just would like a little bit more practical background as to why we have this legislation.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we're somewhat, should be somewhat hesitant about promulgating legislation that deals with specific issues, and I can assure you that with that being said, there was a specific issue that came to mind this last year, had to do with some horses that were brought into the state without being tested for the Coggins test, and it seemed on the part of the owner of the horses that it was more practical for them just to pay the fine for the violation of the importation rules, but yet not go forward with what we believe is the necessary good stewardship of making sure that our livestock industry, and in the case here with the horses, is protected. So the reason, the genesis of this bill is to provide some more authority for the state veterinarian to provide the requirements for the importation of livestock above and beyond what we have now. And if the people will not comply, they'll just pay the fine. They can pay it twice. Gets up to be 1 year in jail in $1,500. You know, that's not likely to happen, but we really need it to provide some additional authority to say that you bring animals into the state and you don't do what you're supposed to do, well, then we need the authority to treat them or to test them, to vaccinate them, and to quarantine them if they're going to jeopardize the health of adjacent livestock. And then if you don't do any of that, we have the ability to, the livestock board will have the ability to authority to sell them animals. It's not to jeopardize our own industry.
Any other questions? Representative Moniz.
Mr. Chairman, I believe if we would be willing to move this bill forward, we would agree that there's some vagueness about order or another, and we would try to provide up a friendly amendment to this bill. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a recommendation that Bill number 18 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. House Bill 18 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bills for the rest of the morning. The intent is to work until 10 to 12, do our committee reports, and then do our special orders this afternoon. If we get to them, the bills, you've been handed out a list, are House Bill 20. House Bill 23 will be re-referred to a committee, so we will not hear that. It's not on the list. House Bill 27, House Bill 44, House Bill 72, House Bill 86, House Bill 87, House Bill 109, and House Bill 113. Now, the chances of us getting through that list are not likely, but that will be the list for in the morning with other bills added to it should we get to those.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 108. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 108, introduced by the Mineral Committee. An act relating to collection agencies. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson. No, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 108 do pass, and I turn the management of the bill over to the representative from House District 56.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill before you is has been before us for 2 years on over the interim, and it really is a revision, a comprehensive revision of how we regulate collection agencies within the state. And it's a fairly, you've seen it's a fairly lengthy bill. Part of it is because it's a recodification of a number of provisions that are already in law. And if you look in your statutes at 3311101 and those statutes immediately following, that's where we currently have our collection agency statutes and the way they are regulated currently. So this bill incorporates a number of those provisions, but it also revises them in a number of important ways as well. And it talked to you a little bit about the system we have now and kind of where we're going and why we're going there. The system we have now, the collection agencies are governed by an appointed board of three people. One is an attorney that's involved in the collections agent business. One is a representative of collection agencies, and one is a representative of those who use collection agencies. And this board meets once a month, and they are charged with the responsibility of licensing, of hearing complaints, and all the other regulatory matters that involve collection agencies. They have been working to do their job, but they have not been able to do their job well for a number of reasons. And part of it is the restriction of having three citizens serving on that board that only meet once a month. Because since we initially adopted the manner in which we govern collection agencies, the number of collection agencies in the state has exploded. And so the work imposed upon the citizen board has exploded as well. There have also been a number of problems with conflicts arising because you have three representatives all from the same industry. You have any number of cases where conflicts have arisen on the board. And, for example, we heard testimony of a complaint that was lodged with the board, but two of the board members had conflicts on it, and so the complaint sat for 2 years without being addressed. You also have concerns that, you know, you have these complaints filed, and then you go look at the records of your competitors, and there's just been some real concern about having your competitor who sits on the board coming and looking at investigating a complaint with you. And because of those problems, the board, the collection agency board, and the banking division worked together to bring this revision to us. We brought it before the body last time, and we're bringing it before again with some significant revisions because we believe that it does a couple of things. First, in the body, it moves that duty of licensing, that duty of investigating complaints, and that duty of overseeing collection agencies into the banking division. In doing this, we hope that it results in more timely review of licensures. We hope that it results in more timely reviews of complaints. It also fills what's really been a huge gap in oversight. Remember, collection agencies, they're very similar to other depository type entities because they're taking money in. When they go out and they find a debtor, they take that money in from the debtor, and then they have to remit that to the creditor. And they're under some statutory obligations to take that in and to pass on amounts to the creditor. And currently there's no mechanism whatsoever to see that they're doing that. It's a sort of they're placed in a fiduciary system of trust, and when we have those situations in other areas in our financial institutions, we have the state examine and make sure, yes, in fact, they are bringing in the money they said they're bringing in, and they're passing on the money that they say they're passing on. We don't have that now. And what this bill does is it sets up a system of examination where the banking division would go in and look and make sure, yes, they're taking in the money they said they were, and so therefore debtors get credit for that money that's been collected. They don't get reported for not paying debts that they have, in fact, paid to collection agencies. And then creditors get the assurance that they're actually getting the money they're entitled to on those collections. And that's the huge gap that this bill fills. Talk a little bit about what the bill does. The Board, in the last time we brought this bill, it just did away with the collection agency board. This bill actually leaves the collection agency board in place, but they serve as an advisory board, much as other advisory boards exist under the Division of Banking. So the appointment provisions and all those sorts of things that were in the old statute are in the new statute, but it provides that they are an advisory board now. Under licensing, the bill wraps the licensing into the banking division, and it makes sense because really the banking division has been doing the legwork on this licensing all along. And so it just, but it allows the division to make those decisions on licensing. It also adds some additional protections that we've sort of done standard throughout the financial services industry where they can do background checks and those sorts of things. And we think it's been a minimum of 45 days to get your license processed under the current system. This will likely cut that significantly. It provides an independent view of complaints, so now instead of having competitors looking at each other when complaints are filed, you have investigators from the Division of Banking looking at those complaints. And it provides for this, as I said, this critical component of examination to make sure that the money they're taking in is the money they're taking in and they're remitting the amounts that they should be. Now, just real briefly, you probably have received some of the same emails that I have that have been criticizing it, and they sort of try to lump this bill in with some of the more onerous federal legislation we've seen. Those charges don't match up in any way, shape, or form with what is actually in the bill, so I'd ask you to look beyond that rhetoric, because what we do here is very similar to what we've done with a number of other financial institutions as far as the licensing and those requirements, and it is a bill that has been backed by the majority of the collection agencies because they think it's going to result in more timely responses to problems. A quick run through on the structure of the bill that you can look at. Of course, the definitions are very similar to what was in the old legislation, but they also incorporate some additional definitions, all of which are consistent with there's a federal act, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which governs not only collection agencies but others, and this makes those definitions consistent with that federal act. You have, again, the collection agency board becoming an advisory board, and that's on page 7. Page 13 spells, and those pages immediately following spell out who needs a license and who's exempt from licensing, trying to get to the nub of regulating collection agencies and not other folks that are out collecting debt. For example, if you have some agreement with somebody, then you're out chasing the debt. If you're not a debt collector, as provided under the Act, it wouldn't apply to you. A real critical provision on page 31 is the examinations and investigations provision, allowing those examinations I spoke about. And then also significantly important is on page 37, there's a list of prohibited practices, and this is not found in the old Act, but it goes through, you know, those. We heard testimony in committee about some of these situations where elderly folks are getting called and saying, hey, your son owes us money, you're responsible for that, you better pay up. Those sorts of abuses are specifically called out and spelled out in this bill so that we can make sure that consumers are protected in the state. And that is a sort of overview bullet shot of the bill. I would, as an initial matter, before we get into this discussion of the broader bill, like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 and ask the body for its favorable consideration.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1.
And what I want to... If those of you who were in the body last time may recall that this is really the issue that probably led to the bill not being introduced last time around. There are provisions in the bill that require resident managers, and that has been in the bill, in the legislation as it currently stands. We took it out as we proposed it last year, and it is in the bill that's currently before you. What this proposed amendment would do is eliminate the requirement for resident managers. The testimony that we received, first of all, I'll tell you why it's still in. Really, it's still in not because I believe it's a meritorious practice, but instead because we wanted to make sure the bill wasn't endangered because of this resident manager provision. But what you find when you look through both the old provisions and the new ones is that there is a requirement for out-of-state agencies to have a resident manager. And there is no requirement for resident managers whatsoever beyond that. The new bill actually takes another step, makes sure that they're licensed and those sorts of things. But again, you look through the current bill, there is no duty whatsoever on a resident manager to do anything. And we heard, and these resident managers get paid by out-of-state agencies. So we heard a lot of testimony from people saying, we like this income, it helps supplement our retirement. But what we did not hear is that resident managers did anything to protect the people of Wyoming or added any value for those monies that the state requires outside collection agencies to pay to resident managers. We did hear testimony that there was a survey of different collection agencies outside the state, of 120 different ones, that almost uniformly came back and said, after we're licensed, after we get our license, we essentially have no more contact with the resident manager. We heard testimony from folks that said their duties really as serving as a resident manager were limited to putting up a plaque in their den at home. And so we have this sort of, for the people that receive these funds, it's a great deal. But for the people of Wyoming, it is not a great deal. Because, of course, those fees get added onto the fees of users of collection agencies. And so Committee of the Whole Amendment does is quite simply eliminate that requirement for resident managers. The system is in place to govern out-of-state collection agencies. That's part of what this bill does. It recognizes there are a lot of out-of-state agencies, and they are subject to jurisdiction of the banking division. They are subject to all the provisions of providers are subject to. The resident manager provision is really just a government-sanctioned transfer of wealth that I don't think makes sense. It's really a bad example of how government can step in and create inefficiencies. So with that, I'd take any questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Representative Wanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly rise against this amendment, and I would love to talk about bad government examples real fast. For those of you who were here last year, this bill failed introduction primarily because of the resident manager requirement. We got emails from all over the state asking us to vote no, saying vote this thing down because of this requirement. And so what we did, you took it back to the Minerals Committee for the entire year, redrafted the bill and said, don't worry, resident managers of this state, we're leaving you in. We're not going to hurt you. Trust us. You know, it doesn't involve you this year. You'll be fine with the bill. You'll be happy. We do that, make it a committee bill, get it through the process, get it through committee, get it to the floor, and the first thing we do is take them out. And I'm sorry, I'm going to control the emotion of my voice, but, I don't really believe, honestly, that resident managers do all that much. And maybe they're not needed, maybe they are, but there is kind of a fairness issue in the process where if we've told them all through the interim that we're not going to hurt them, not going to touch them, don't worry, we're leaving it in, how can we on Committee of the Whole, as soon as we get it through the standing committee, come and take them out? And I would ask you to vote no. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have had a lot of hearings on this, and we've had a lot of input. But there's never been a promise that we would not change the resident managers. We had it as recently as a couple of days ago. It was very clear that there was questions about the value that they brought to the process and to the state of Wyoming and the citizens of Wyoming. And the testimony said very little. Now, these are nice people, and I think if I had an income from putting a license up on my in my office and sending a bill and getting a check paid, I'd like that. And I don't fault them for that at all, but there were no promises made or no misleading in any of the meetings that we would not ever change resident managers. This was put into the draft because it thought we could find a place that this would work, and we also put in some language that would define what their responsibilities were that was a little better than what was in the past. So this is a work in progress, but the inference that there was a promise made, it was just not accurate from the process in the Minerals Committee.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this amendment. Being new to the Minerals Committee, I had a little bit of the background and looked at this bill very closely. and feel that it is a very good bill, except for the resident manager provisions. I agree that those provisions do not make any economic sense. And I don't know about promises that were not made. However, there is no room in this bill for the resident managers. And it may be a special interest group that pushed back on this body in the past. However, this get this out of there. The resident managers are just that. They are receiving compensation for doing nothing. They do not have any skin in the game. And my concern is that in this bill, it requires the out-of-state owners to have a resident manager. It's vesting a right with them, I never felt comfortable with that. So I very much like this amendment, and I would ask that we support this.
Any other discussion on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 108? Is there a question being called? Representative.
I just have a question on this. I've actually turned over a debt on a time or two over to a collection agency, and I've always wondered if I'm actually getting the money, my portion that I'm entitled to. And I see this bill allows for the audit and investigation of that. And I think that's just great. But does this bill preclude any person who assigns a debt to a collection agency from finding out in a personal lawsuit whether they've been screwed out of their money? And if it does, well, it's not a good thing. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Question on the amendment? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 108, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Division being called. All those in favor, please rise. The amendment is adopted. Back on the bill, Representative Stubson. Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to House Bill 108 and would ask you to vote no. Basically, what this bill is taking the collection agency's programs and handing it over to the Division of Banking. And the question is why? Well, I would like to discuss that. The fine representative from House District 56 explained the three board members. But the three board members, the collection agency member board member has been there for 12 years. The member at large has been there for 10 years. And the attorney that serves on that board has been there since 1995. He's been there over 15 years. So what's happened a couple of years ago, I think they just gave up. You know, board should have fresh members come into it. But this board has been stagnant. It's been absolutely stagnant. Why are we letting the government come in on an industry that can regulate itself? And I suggest that could be part of the problem. Last March, we received a new member to the board. And in committee, we heard testimony that the board was divided 2-1. And this member that is against it, the member that wants to leave the control into the board, is the one that has sent you your emails, if you've read those emails. He's very much in tune to the collection agency. He's very much wanting to improve it. He's very much wanting to put it back into the hands of the people. They want to regulate themselves. They want self-regulation. The other thing, that if this bill was to go forward, it now takes a very dysfunctional board, members that can't agree, puts them into the Division of Banking where they do absolutely nothing. Now, this says they serve as an advisory board. They get paid for that. But they have no teeth. All they can do is suggest. So, Do they serve a purpose? In my opinion, no. The other thing, at the very end of this bill, we have had collection agencies in Wyoming and outside of Wyoming that have been paying their fees into this collection board. This board has amassed, I believe, and I'm in round numbers, $832,000. If you had an anxious and an ambitious board, would they have not have used those resources to improve their board? This bill, at the end of it, basically says that we're going to take that money and just give it back to the state. State, here it is. This board gave up. Here's the other thing you should know. The attorney on this board is hopefully, or his appointment comes up again here in about 6 weeks in March. And my thought is simply, if we can get two board members back onto this board that are ready to change the law, then the board can function for themselves. So here's what I'm asking, folks. I'm asking you to resist this bill. I will come in with another bill this session that basically says what this bill's doing is great. It is. It's great. It's updating the laws. We heard testimony that these statutes are very outdated. We want them updated. But we want to take the word commissioner out or the division of banking out and put the agency board word in there. Let them regulate themselves. And for this reason, Mr. Chairman, I ask everybody to vote no on House Bill 108. Thank you.
Madam Chairwoman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a question for the good member from Natrona County, both good members from Natrona County. And that I guess that did lead to my question about the board. I wondered why the board was even left in existence. It seems like they've been stripped of all their duties and powers other than advisory, and that they get together at the request of the commissioner, unless two of them want to get together, I guess. But I just was wondering why the board was even left in place on the bill. It seemed to me to not really have much purpose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chairman Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that last question first, I guess, when the bill came before you last session, it actually did not have the board in it at all. That was really left in at the request of the collection agency industry. And it's really very similar to a number of other advisory boards that are utilized by the Division of Banking to promulgate their rules and regulations and those sorts of functions to make sure that they've got people that deal with the impacts of those regulations on the ground having input into the process, and that there's an avenue for industry to bring concerns to the Division of Banking. And that's really why it was left in, because they wanted that formal mechanism of input left in.
Madam Chairwoman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have sat on the Minerals Committee for 4 years and listened to the testimony about this bill for that long. And I don't know, I fluctuated back and forth between supporting it and non-supporting it. But I guess the real question for me is, you know, I think people should pay their debts, and I think that collection agencies should be accountable for poor business practices. But it seems like we're a little out of order when we regulate collection agencies, but we don't work on the people who prey on the poorest of the poor, those with the payday lenders and title loan lenders and check cashing places. I mean, it just seems like there is as more imminent work than folding this into the Department of Banking. I would prefer to see the board revised and revitalized, and if it needs statutory direction on term limits, et cetera, et cetera. But it just seems out of order to me to work on the collection agencies and not those areas that prey on the poorest of the poor. I urge you to not support this bill.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had consistent testimony from the Division of Banking and the Division of Auditing that this would not increase any of their people. These are their expenses, essentially. They will do this, and that they can do it efficiently because that's what they do. To have an agency try to recontrol and do that themselves sets up what I would call growth of government as opposed to what's in this. And a sign of the growth of government in the negative on this one is to take the money that's accumulated there, put it back into the general fund so it can be used for other things. I think this will have efficiency on the licensing to where you won't have to wait 45 days because they only meet once a month. And the Division of Banking prepares all of the material for the meetings. The meetings sometimes last as little as 25 minutes. They go home. Those kinds of things are taken out of this process. So I think we're stepping in the right direction to get the right amount of state government that is really self-funded to look at these kinds of issues and make them better for our consumers in the state. We heard the testimony of grandparents that were called by collection agency, rogue collection agents, and debt collectors, which is another issue, that they were obligated for some expenditures that were not theirs. And so this will give us a system that takes care of that. I think we can say that our banking self-funded department is fairly efficient. We're not adding any people, and I think it's the right direction to go.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sit on the Minerals Committee, and I voted for this in committee, but as amended, I stand on and against.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question regarding the fees. And you know, if we were to have a fiscal note but yet have it pertain to individual collection agencies, is this bill cause any change in their cost of doing business as far as fees and hearing cost per hour and so forth? Or, you know, I guess what is the source of the resistance that everybody hears about in their email? If it's not dollars, what is it, just a different master that people are worried about or what?
Vice Chairman Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would correct the good representative and say that the bulk of industry has been supportive of this legislation. There has been a small group that certainly does oppose it, but the bulk has been in support. And one of the reasons is because of the financial impact. Now, of course, with resident managers out, you eliminate that expense. But also administering, as the good representative from Laramie County said, this board has amassed an amount of $800-some thousand over the last couple decades because they've been charging more to administer the program than it costs them to actually do the work. And so it is anticipated that both the appropriation from this body for the oversight of collection agencies, that will decrease, but it's also anticipated that ultimately when the new fee schedules are done, it'll actually match up the costs of those fees with the expenses of actually doing the licensing and the oversight. So that is anticipated to actually save collection agencies some money.
Representative Wanitzer.
Dan, just so everybody in the mix is clear. So I understand. Just some quick points, because I did listen to one of these meetings in the interim, and I did ask around and got the list of who's been on this board the last 20 years, and it certainly doesn't change over much. But I just want the body to know, of the three members on this board, one of them has been to both committee meetings, testified, sent you emails, the one who thinks the collection board can work, the attorney member and the banker member, from what they tell me, and the minutes show, didn't show up to any of the meetings, didn't talk about any of these bills, the two that are saying we don't want the responsibility. And it bothers me when at some former legislature, and I don't know when the collection agency board is created, but it's agency 33, so it has been in existence for a while, there's some reason we set them up as separate from the Department of Audit as a self-governing board, as we have about 15 to 20 other self-governing boards in Wyoming, the nursing board, the pharmacy board, the paramutual commission, the cosmetology board. That originally they were going to license themselves and regulate themselves, and they meet every month. But really it's been a very strong showing to me that the one person who says this board can work with a couple of changes has been the most vocal advocate of, we need some changes, but we can make this board work. And the other two members of the body, are the ones who I haven't seen show up very much, and one had to leave committee meeting halfway through because he had more important things to do. So I'd ask you to keep that in mind. I think we can bring a bill back this session that works, that strengthens the laws, that helps them govern themselves better. A lot of people talked about expanding the board to 5 members, which reduces conflicts. But we have so many collection agency members, people who work with them across the state. It's interesting that one person's been on 5 terms, one's been on 3 terms, and the other woman who used to be on last year says she's been on back and forth on this board since the 60s. So with such a wide array of people throughout the state who could be serving on this board, I think we've been negligent in getting fresh blood and getting turnover and getting people who are excited about serving on this. I don't understand why we're keeping the board as an advisory board with no real power except to keep getting paid to show up to meetings if they really can't do anything. And I, as a good government person, I'm always more open to having a 3-person or 5-person commission oversee complaints than a single division of banking administrator. So I'd ask you to vote no on the bill and see if we can come up with something better in the next 2 weeks. Thanks.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to back up to comments that my colleague from District 26 had made. This bill is a step in the right direction. At one point in time, I represented a lot of debtors. And in that process, that is sorting out these collection practices. And it has been difficult. It was very difficult. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is a nice protection if you can find and hold that collector accountable. And what I very much like about this bill is a licensing component of it, coupled with some good enforcement. It is there. This bill will help those people who need it the most. We've all heard the stories, the terrible stories regarding the unfair collection practices. Somebody calling up an elderly mother or a grandmother and saying, hey, your son owes this debt, you need to pay it. And this would allow an attorney representing debtors to be able to have a good forum, a place to go to find and hold those dishonest, I want to say disreputable, collectors accountable. It's very good. Once I switched over to the dark side in my practice, we have the other side of the problem. And that is that the creditors have difficulties saying, how are you accountable? How do I know for a fact that I'm getting what I am supposed to be getting? And that audit power that we've put in here with the Banking Commission is just a very, very good way to handle this. I encourage you to think of both sides of this issue and the thought that's went into this bill.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Dave Wanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to point out we had asked the AG's office what their thoughts were, and their comment was there's been very few complaints in Wyoming. So we checked it out, and in the last 3 years, we've had 7 complaints in the state of Wyoming. That hardly seems to me for a reason to ask for the government to come in and take over an industry. The testimony was is that our statutes are antiquated, and the testimony was they needed to take it over because the industry has grown so large. My question is, when are the statutes too old? My question is, well, I probably better not go there, but and maybe one of the reasons they put $832,000 into the bank and didn't change it, because they just did not care. They just charged the bills and they were coming in. I think we can get this thing fixed with a 5-member collection board. They, with those resources, can go outside. I'm sure they can handle all kinds of auditors. We can put more teeth into it and we can make it work. I think the main thing that you have to think about on this bill is who you want running it. Is it the state that you want running it, or is it private enterprise that can look over themselves? Very few complaints up to this point. And if we just get some people on there that are willing to take that on, and you've seen there's one ready to take it on based on just if you agree with what he said or not, he's ready to take it on. So I still can ask for your no vote. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments.
you think about the people that have debt problems and go are being impacted by collection agencies, they're not prone to go to the state attorney general for help. That's just not the nature of this customer group. And then I think I've lost my second point.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor, when Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report to do so with the recommendation that bill number 108 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House bill 108 is passed committee of the whole. Division being called. All those in favor of House bill 108, please stand. House Bill 108 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 18, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 108, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Pedersen, Chairman.
Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Committee announcements. Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet at noon in 4 minutes in room H18. We're going to discuss House Bill 2, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Sunset, House Bill 4, Department of Insurance Background Checks, House Bill 9, Department of Insurance Licensure Revisions, if time permits, and House Bill 10, Insurance Fraud Prevention, if time permits.
Chairman Berger.
I need taller people to back me up here, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will continue budget hearings at 12:30 with State Parks.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, to discuss House Bill 22, phased in fuel tax increase, and House Bill 33, exceeding speed limit while passing. And also, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the body that the Senate and House Transportation Committee invite you to join a demonstration tomorrow upon noon recess up in room 302 of the WildLink system. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet upon adjournment today in room H17 to hear bills, House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges, and House Bill 73, Dental Services Freedom Bill.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a school on school finance recalibration information. It's going to be held Tuesday. I really encourage all the members to attend. We're going to have two meetings, one at 8 o'clock in the morning and one upon adjournment, to cover House Bill 127, School Finance Recalibration, Senate File 70, which is our Educational Accountability Bill, and Senate File 106, which is School Finance Local Resources. It'll be really informative, help get everybody up to speed before this stuff hits the floor.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Judiciary Committee number one will meet 15 minutes after adjournment to continue its work on House Bill 24, Voting Rights, House Bill 29, DUI, Elimination of the Right to Refuse Test, and House Bill 30, Execution of Judgment Liens. The committee will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. to consider the following bills: House Bill 42, Coroner Record Confidentiality; House Bill 62, Wyoming Controlled Substances Act Amendments; House Bill 43, Workers' Compensation Appeals; and House Bill 51, Industrial and Energy Development Protection. In addition, Mr. Speaker, I need to have House Bill 23 re-referred to Appropriations.
House Bill 23 has been moved to be re-referred to Appropriations. Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House stand in recess until 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is in recess till 2 p.m.